Good afternoon and welcome to Good News Updates with Living Compassion. I'm pleased to be joined this afternoon by David, who is a longtime part of the Sangha and just completed the first There Is Nothing Wrong With You retreat of the season with us last week. Welcome, David.
Thanks, Jen. Thanks for having me.
Sure. So, as I mentioned, David, you've been around a darn long time and have a very well-established practice. In fact, you captain a sitting group in your local area and have been to countless numbers of retreats. If I'm not mistaken, done three previous There Is Nothing Wrong With You retreats?
Yeah, that's right. I did two There Is Nothing Wrong With You retreats a whole number of years back. And then this past one, this past week, was the third one that I've done.
So I'm curious, what had you deciding to do the retreat again?
Wow, that's a great question. Boy, there's a lot of angles I could take with that, but I think if I just put it in simple, like the simplest terms, what came up for me around the retreat was, you know, apart from kind of wanting to look at a specific process in my life, was just that it was a way for me to kind of stay connected with Sangha, to reach out and get support from Sangha in a place where I, kind of a place where I was stuck. And then I think specifically with the There Is Nothing Wrong With You retreat, I felt like it would be a really good idea to kind of check in and kind of ground myself with the fundamentals of practice again.
Yeah. That's really interesting what you said about wanting to touch base on a particular process that you were looking at. And what I saw when you said that was that the process of the There Is Nothing Wrong With You retreat is one that we could repeat over and over because it's applicable to everything in practice.
Yeah, that's so true. I mean, that is so true. You know, I was kind of going along in my life and there was a particular piece of content that is very familiar to me and, you know, kind of embroiled in that and just, you know, not really seeing clearly. And then, of course, the There Is Nothing Wrong With You retreat, as you're saying, there is this experience, this process, this kind of the way it's laid out. I can just take whatever it is, wherever I'm at in practice, and I can go and kind of apply what is kind of on offer at the There Is Nothing Wrong With You retreat to my specific situation. As I said, no matter kind of if I'm just beginning practice or, you know, where I am right now.
Yeah. You know, I'm not sure I'd seen it before you laid that out, but it really speaks to why this retreat is equally effective for someone who's really just entering practice or someone who's been around a very long time. Because just coming to practice is such a perfect way to get, I think you said this, to get grounded in the tools of practice and to learn essentially how to practice. You know, one of the things I hear from so many people who come to that retreat, I have the great honor of being able to facilitate it, and so many people talk about having found Sherry's books. And I know it was true for me that reading the books and seeing that possibility, feeling so called to another possibility in our lives is one thing, and then learning the process of actually how to take the steps to do that is another, and that this retreat really walks through those steps.
Yeah, it does. It really does. And what was coming up for me is, as you were kind of sharing that, was the sense that how I interpret how to do those steps was very different when I first came to practice and where I'm at now, and yet it's still totally relevant to my practice. And so on two levels, it just feels so supportive. One is that, you know, I get to go back and reground in the steps of practice. And the second is I can step back and get a greater sense of, you know, where I was practicing at, where I'm practicing at now. Just kind of checking back into the process allows me to see how am I interpreting the very same kind of material that was that's in the retreat. How is that going for me right now?
And as you say that, I see the great gift in having all kinds of different folks in the retreat. Almost always now these days, there are a handful of people in the retreat who have done the retreat before. And
mm-hmm.
I think they bring so much with them to the richness of the retreat in modeling that. And as you say, having been through it before, but now sort of going through it and seeing it at deeper levels. And at the same time, I know for me, what folks who are new to practice bring to it is of equal value. I'm so inspired and sort of re-energized with people coming into it with fresh eyes and what they see and remembering what that is, and the power of those beginning insights it's a boost to all of us, it feels like, in practice.
Yeah, I love that too. I think you used the word inspiration. That is so true, because I myself was just absolutely inspired by the kind of the willingness, the courage, the insights, everything that was arising for everybody who came to retreat. And that includes the facilitators and kind of everybody who puts it together. It's like the way conditioning would have us believe is that, like, well, I've done that before.
Right.
But, of course, in reality, on so many different levels, that's just so not true.
Yeah.
And I think what you're pointing at there illustrates that beautifully.
Well, and I can certainly say from my perspective, I get to do the retreat over and over, and truly every single retreat is completely different. Completely different.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that certainly was my experience too, on each of the three that I've been to. And it really acknowledges that, like, not only kind of is, and in the general sense that, like, each moment of life happens to be new, but that if I'm practicing, my level of awareness makes life kind of in technicolor. So there is that sense that there is never a place where, I guess it goes back to the idea that kind of we're always starting at the very beginning because it's all new.
Yeah, and starting at the very beginning is the most exhilarating, fun place to be.
So true. And, so often that's where the greatest insights and kind of the most expansiveness is available. It's just in that kind of, I guess I've heard it said in practice before, that kind of I don't know place, that place where, wow, this is a new experience. And so just going out into it with the kind of like the willingness and the openness that is available in the moment.
Yeah, and the other thing that occurs to me as we're talking is that, conditioning, of course, morphs to whatever we're up to in life. So it takes over the content of everything and then creates the suffering within that. And so practice is no different. And then I think one of the great things about coming to it, there's nothing wrong with your retreat for the first time, is it really takes conditioning off guard. It doesn't
mm-hmm.
have a chance to kind of, rally its troops. And so I think that's one of the great gifts, as I'm looking at it, of practicing with people who are doing the retreat for the first time, is, again, having that experience of what does it look like to see this before conditioning gets a hold of it, and then what
mm-hmm.
sort of the old-timers, if you will, bring to it is, and how to carry that forward and keep that commitment in the face of what conditioning will attempt to do with it.
Yeah, that's so true. There's a lot of, I think, as you said, there was a number of people who did repeat the retreat, who were on retreat, and there was a lot of talk of that sense of, it takes just as much kind of courage to get there for the first time in the kind of face of all that, conditioning and all that the voice would say about it. It takes just as much to get there the second, the third, however many times.
Oh, yeah.
Kind of, because conditioning is in there with, well, this is coming, and, how about that, and, oh, whatever it says kind of thing. So,
And then there's the old, if we won't fall for that sort of frontal attack, there's the old, I've done that retreat. I don't need to do that again.
Totally. Been there, done that.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, I really appreciate you sharing your experience with us, David.
Yeah, it was a real pleasure. And I'd just like to say, if there's folks out there who are kind of in anything like that kind of dialogue of, like, been there, done that, or, it's too scary to go back, or, any of that, just from experience, it is so, so worth it to just get off the fence and just kind of follow the heart, let life just kind of get you up there. Because once there, it's just a beautiful, beautiful experience.
Yeah, well put. Thank you. And I really also appreciate the reminder of, you know, if there's a particular thing that I just see myself stumbling over again and again, I think you used the word stuck early on, that, again, that's a great thing to bring to the retreat. Just decide, hey, you know,
yeah,
I want to look at this. I'm gonna for the retreat and look at this process. What's going on here?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that'll make it completely new.
Yeah, exactly. All right, David.
Great.
Well, thanks so much for being with us tonight.
You bet. Thank you, Jen. Have a great show.
Thanks. Take good care.
Bye now.
Okay, bye-bye. All right, Michael, we'll turn it over to you and Sherry.
Okay, great. Thank you, Jen. Thank you, David. Good afternoon, and welcome to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Good afternoon, Sherry.
Howdy, Michael.
Howdy.
We're getting ready for frog jump here in the Wild West, and so we say howdy.
Howdy. Great.
How you doing?
I'm excellent. How are you?
Good. Very good. Very good. Hey, did they mention that there have been two cancellations in the retreat that's coming up?
No.
Did they mention that? There have been.
No, they did not.
There have been. And I happen to know that because I just got word of it. And with that inspiring little fervorino from David and Jen, if there's anybody going, shoot, I wish I had signed up for that one, this would be a good time to do it.
Great. Mm-hmm. So, as you said, there is nothing wrong with your retreats, more than one coming up. There's also one more, what you practice is what you have retreat, and not what but how retreat on the schedule.
Yes. All exciting things, and the point has been made that if you think you've done it, you actually haven't.
Great.
Mm-hmm.
And also, Sherry, you'll be at the Shambhala Mountain Center in Colorado, July 13th through 15th, a weekend workshop titled Awareness, It's Not What You Think.
Indeed. I hope everybody who can joins me there. I've never been there. So I'd like to see a lot of friendly faces, if I could.
Great. It looks beautiful on the website.
Well, it's Colorado, I mean. People don't move there because it's unattractive. There is that.
Great. And all those details are on the website, schedule.livingcompassion.org. And I'd like to remind our callers to focus on one topic, please, in about 5 minutes. And let's get started.
All right, thank you.
You're welcome. First caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, this is Andrea calling.
Well, hello, Andrea.
Hello.
What's going on?
Well, it's been a while since I've called in, so I'm a little...
Actually be on the show right now.
Uh-huh. And now you're off speaker and even more audible.
Well, what's going on with me is my son has been having some issues at school, and it's been really hard for me to deal with that, feeling like, you know, sometimes it's very hard to have unconditional love.
Sometimes.
Well, actually, a lot of the time, you know, I'm glad you said sometimes because it's actually an exception rather than a rule, I guess.
Well, here's just something, to kind of a philosophical thing to consider.
Uh-huh.
The nature of unconditional love is that it is unconditional. So we can't actually have unconditional love if it becomes conditional.
Yeah.
Now that can sound kind of depressing, if assuming people followed it. And yet it's really, it kind of makes it clear what we're up against. So I can, you know, I mean, I have kids a lot older than yours. And so the idea with that is I've been unconditionally loving right up until the moment that one of them does something that I really don't like. Well, actually, unconditional love is one of those things that we can't know about anything, but we really can't know about, because it has to be over before we actually know whether or not it happened.
Well, what happened was that he got suspended for the day at school, and he's having a lot of impulse control issues and problems with getting along with other kids. And
he's
right
like
now,
six, isn't he?
He's six, but none of the other kids seem to be having all these issues. And
well, the thing that fascinates me is that kids are now suspended from school at age six.
I know.
That's really a new phenomenon.
Yeah, and things are different, I guess.
I suppose,
and
so, apparently.
Yeah, and, you know, we're seeing a therapist with him, and the therapist thinks he may have ADHD.
Of course.
And so I don't know.
We hardly know of a child who can be taken in for observation and not diagnosed with at least ADHD.
Yeah, maybe. And my reaction was, when he was suspended, there was a lot of judgment, and I found it really difficult to be a loving parent when I found out. I came home from work and I just felt like what came up was just, I didn't want to be around him at all, and felt like, oh my God, is he a monster? What's going on? Even though, you know, at other times, he's a very sweet, adorable, loving kid. And so I guess, you know, I could beat myself up about it, but I'm not really beating myself up, but just, I guess there's someone who's disappointed that I couldn't be there for him when he really needed me.
Well, it's interesting, isn't it? So, you know, we could say, what do they say he has? Poor impulse control?
Yeah.
Okay. And so what that means is that he does really well until he doesn't. Could we say that?
Sure, yeah.
Yeah. Now, have you ever known anyone for whom that could not be said?
No.
In fact, isn't that what you're experiencing?
Yeah.
You do really well at being a loving parent right up until you couldn't.
And I'm seeing a lot of similarities in his personality and my personality, but I think the only difference is that he kind of acts out his anger, and I pushed it inward when I was growing up, and I think that's really the main difference. So I can see, I don't know, I can empathize with him, but then when this happened, it all seemed to disappear, and I don't know, I'm not sure where to go with this, but.
Well, me either, but I would explore this. So you are going along, and you're being a loving parent. And then you hit a circumstance where you are not able to make yourself be the way you should be, / the way you want to be.
Right.
Okay? So if I were to beat you up over that, would that be helpful?
No.
No?
Not at all. And I'm not really being beaten up so much. It's just that I think there's someone here who's disappointed that that
right.
happened.
Well, but this is what I want to explore, because we're looking at the parallel between you and your son.
Oh, okay.
Okay? So, you know, the assumption that conditioned people operate out of is that people are difficult because they want to be. So we're looking at a six-year-old child, and we're going to punish him for not meeting our standards, because we project he could meet them if he wanted to. He just doesn't want to. Yeah?
Mm-hmm.
Would you agree?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, because what else are we saying? I mean, how else? I mean, he certainly... I can't imagine that he would see, if he even understands enough to know what suspension is, it would hardly be seen as supportive, right?
Yeah.
So it's just, we don't like the way you act. Everybody else can act the way we want them to act. You're not acting the way we want you to act, so we don't want you around.
Yeah.
All right? So there's that.
Right.
And the thing that is true, at least in my way of seeing things, is that he's not doing anything that everybody else isn't doing. And so what he's got to do is figure out his way through the field of landmines. So he will come up with whatever his coping strategy is. Right? Because what's not happening for him and what's not happening for you is the answer to a simple question that we never ask in awareness practice, and that is, why? Why is this happening? What's going on with him that is causing this to happen? And I understand it's a fast-paced world we live in. But to me, putting a label on somebody and medicating them is hardly the same as helping somebody to see what's going on with them and helping them learn, primarily through their own experience with mentoring and assistance and support, how not to do that, how not to be like that.
Yeah, I kind of jump onto the other side of the duality, and there's this rebellious person that comes out and basically says that the society is messed up and that he's only getting in trouble because he hits, whereas the other kids can be extremely mean and say terrible things to him, but that's acceptable because they're not physically hitting him.
Yes. And that's not helpful either, is it?
No.
No, so it doesn't help either one of you deal with the situation. Doesn't help either one of you to be in the situation in a way that actually makes you successful.
I guess I just really want to be able to be there for him and to help him.
How about for you?
What am I going through? Is that what you mean, like being there to help myself? Or?
Yeah, because, I mean, what I'm suggesting is it's exactly the same situation. Okay, so he goes along and he does fine until he can't keep it together any longer and act the way he should. And then he does what he does in his little six-year-old world. You go along. And then when you can't be how you should be any longer, then you do what you do to cope in your quite a bit older world. The process is the same. The content is different, but the process is the same.
Right.
So if you can see your way through it, you have a better than an average chance of helping him find his way through it.
Right.
But if if your coping strategy is hoping he stops being that way, then it doesn't look very good. Can you see that?
Sherry, I think we have lost her.
Oh, dear. I hope it wasn't something I said.
I'm not seeing her in the queue here. How about if I keep an eye open for her?
Okay, that'd be great.
Come back in the air. Okay, great. And let's go to our next caller.
Right.
Next caller, you are now live on the air. Would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, Sherry and Michael. This is Sherry from San Francisco.
Well, good evening.
Hi.
Good evening.
What's going on?
It's always a little disappointing when we just lose somebody.
Yes, yes. Right mid-looking.
I know. We're all like, well, I was sort of, you know, you're just there listening and waiting. And
yes.
I'm practicing showing up again.
Very good. Very good.
And I really loved the good news update because conditioning has been on me, you know, well, you can't, you know, the same. You can't just call and show up because, you know, you've done that over and over again. And so I loved the good news update because it's different every time.
Oh, yes. Now, you mean you've done the There's Nothing Wrong With You retreat?
No, I'm sorry. I meant just the idea of doing something over and over again.
Oh, yeah.
That it's, you know, even though I've called before numerous times and just showed up to see what would happen, you know, conditioning wants me to think that been there, done that.
Right. When, in fact, that's what we're attempting to do in every moment of life.
Exactly.
And it is, it's funny when you step back far enough to realize how absurd it is that we could believe that you've ever been there, done that. You know?
Yes.
Because it's not possible.
But
it's
exactly.
So believable. I don't know if it's believable, but so many people believe it.
Well, I was really believing it. You know, there were a number of times throughout the day when that story would drop in. Oh, you really just think you're going to call tonight? You know, don't you think you should have something to talk about? And I would pause, you know, and then I was like, oh, no, wait a minute. I'm not falling for that.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
But it is, you know, there was a part of me who it really is believable.
Yes. Well, and yes, if we're not paying close attention, that we're meant to fall for that sort of thing. The thing about it for people who have been practicing for a while is that, this is vaguely familiar. I think we've had this conversation. If you drop in to where you are right now, then you get to see everything that's contained in where you are right now. And, of course, what conditioning wants us to do is prepare so that the present moment experience is actually never available to you.
Yes.
And what would
yes.
be possible for you to see in this moment remains unseen.
Mm-hmm.
So
yes.
really getting that the only hope we ever have of something new is to be present. Now, people, conditioned, unconscious people, go all over the place seeking new experiences. And they don't realize that they're actually not having new experiences because
yeah.
the same unconscious, conditioned mind is going to new places to have the same experience.
Yes. And what I just experienced is the opposite of that. Like when you said, well, I think we've had this conversation before, it doesn't really matter. Even if you were saying the exact same words,
right.
that you said the last time I called, I'm having a completely different experience.
Yes, because you're present.
Yes.
So it, that, you know, when we talk about David and Jen talking about, you know, you go to that retreat and it's a brand new retreat because you're different, you know, that kind of thing that we always say, it's true if you have any degree of presence at all. If you don't, if you go there and you're completely identified with the same conditioned mind that you were identified with the last time you were there, then there will be enough of that that's the same that it will really, the information you get is, it is the same experience. So even though the food is different, that doesn't really register because what you hear is, well, you know, I don't really like this. I liked what was served before back. And then you're in a different place, you're staying in a different place, and that's room for, oh, I was really hoping that I would get to stay in such and such because, you know, that's where I stayed last time, and I really, so suddenly the experience that you had before becomes the yardstick by which this new experience is going to be measured.
Right.
Yeah. So it's still staying in the same unconscious state and conditioned mind just makes everything fit into its program. But if we have any degree of present moment consciousness at all, then we realize that, well, of course, you know, it's not the same at all.
Yeah, and what I'm just loving is that it's like, you know, this is a perfect opportunity for me to keep practicing that because it's been, you know, sort of set, I set it up that way as a practice opportunity. And I'm just thinking, like, how can I bring more of that into all the other parts of my life?
Yes. Yes. So, what's the answer?
Well, it seems so simple all of a sudden. It's sort of like, I have to just turn away from those voices over, and just like I did all day today. So
yes.
All day today when they try and get me to think that been there, done that, same thing. If I'm driving my son to school and they want me to think that, you know, this is just another morning driving my son to school, I just
yes.
turn away from that.
Yes. Well, you can turn away from it, which if you're not careful, as you've probably noticed, will put you into the same conversation about that conversation. So what's possible is to bring awareness games into everything you do. So there you are driving your son to school. Now, of course, you could pick a different route every time. You know, it may
yeah.
be only one block different, but, you know, you could do that. Even if you had to drive a little out of your way, you could make sure that it was a different drive every morning. Every afternoon, whenever you do it.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing you could do is plan to notice something different each time. So you're going to be particularly attentive to everything that's red.
Aha, okay. Yes.
Yeah,
yes.
So you're looking for red doors. Now, of course, people would say, well, you can't do that while you're driving, but of course you can. And so because, of course, you don't have to stare at things to see them. You know, you can
right.
be expanding your awareness so that your awareness is getting broader and broader and it's bringing all sorts of things in. So there are endless things that we can do instead of being in that same old conversation. Because that's, you know, been there, done that. The thing that everybody has been there, done that to death. Is be in that conversation in their head.
I know.
Yeah. And of course,
that's what's so, that is, that's so ironic, isn't it?
It
it's
is.
Like, oh, yeah.
Yeah, it is. So doing that kind of thing, you know, I had this little image of, you know, every time you, something or other, you jump up and down three times. And
yeah.
And that's a, and so where am I now? And then you stand there and watch what arises in the moment. So doing all of those kinds of things that will cause you to be present and knock you out of the story in your head will dramatically change up that relationship. Dramatically. You know, do everything that you can with your left hand that you ordinarily do with your right and vice versa.
I love this. I really love this. I feel like it's
always
it,
make sure
I, you know,
when you go to walk that you start on your you take your first step with your left foot. Okay. Always chew 6 times on the left side, 6 times on the right side, 6 times on the left. Okay. World's full of them. Go ahead.
I'm just so happy. I love this because I realize while I'm talking to you, and this is the great insight that even though conditioning has tried to talk me out of just showing up, it's kind of gone along with this whole program now. But this is great that you've given me all of these new places to introduce it.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
yeah,
I love
especially
that.
Sherry, especially the places that really are, in a sense, repetitious.
Mm-hmm.
So
yes.
if I spend a lot of time in the kitchen nowadays, and so if it's something like doing dishes, make sure that how you're doing the dishes is different. It's one of those, you know, hold the plate with the opposite hand and wash it with the, you know, the places where it can lull you into going off with it because it's also rote.
Yes, because, of course, that's the one it's the most likely that the stories are going to start pouring
right.
in.
Yep.
And this is great.
If you're gone enough, then it can alter the system before you catch it, and then it's just that much harder to disidentify. So, you know, you're driving your son to school, and it starts in, and by the time you drop him off, it's moved you into some kind of funky place, and then you have to spend whatever amount of the day trying to get back out of that hole that it's dragged you down into. Whereas if you're doing the things that help you to be present, then you don't get dragged down in that hole. It's a great energy time saver. Being present.
Oh, thank you so much.
You are so welcome.
See, I have to say, you've never said all that before, at least that I know of. That was all perfectly brand new.
Oh, I love it. I love
yes.
it.
Yes.
All right.
Oh,
thanks, Sherry.
Thank you so much.
All right. Bye-bye.
Show. Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us, Sherry. You're listening to your open air. That was fun, Sherry.
Yeah. The list of things that it's possible to do, not in order to be present, but while one is present, it's just endless.
Yeah.
In fact, I was talking with someone recently who, now this may be hard to imagine, but on occasion finds me annoying. And the reason for it is because I am a nonstop, I'm nonstop involved with everything that's going on around me.
Yes.
And which seems reasonable to me because it's where I am. But
yes.
For this other person, it's constant. It's a matter of constantly being, it feels like being dragged into my world. Right?
Yeah.
So I say, well, you know, what world are you inhabiting otherwise? Because this is the world that we actually currently are both in. And so the suggestion was, you know, the old Inspector Clouseau and Cato.
Yeah.
That it can be like a Dharma game. So there we are, you know, or Sherry and her son going to school. And so we're going along, and you're talking about, you know, everything that's going on around you, the trees and the birds and the sky and the buildings and the whatever it is. And, of course, what I want to do is go off into my own world and maintain that because that's what we think. That's who we think we are for a really long time. And so you keep talking about this stuff, and it jars me into being here, basically. So
yeah.
if if it becomes a Dharma game, then every time you are here and you do something or say something that brings me here, then I approach it not as a an opportunity to go up into conditioned mind for a story about why doesn't he just be quiet for me? This is why being around kids drives people crazy, by the way. You may have noticed on occasion with two little ones. So it's an opportunity to be kind of catapulted into the present moment and experience the present with a completely fresh mind. And that's the, you know, when Cato jumps off the refrigerator onto Inspector Clouseau, you know, it could either really tick him off or it could be such a great opportunity to have a fun and playful kind of Dharma combat.
Yes. And I've noticed with my kids that they see things in ways that would never have occurred to me.
Yes. So, you know that peace quote that happened recently, something about it's only work if you want to be doing something else, that kind of thing. And so kids like that are only annoying if you want to be off with conditioned mind doing something else. But if you really want to be present, they are. And they can drag you, willingly or unwillingly, right into the present with them to have all these amazing observations and conversations. And
Yes.
Why Zen masters of old loved to play, you know, that you'd there'd always be stories of them out on the village green playing with the kids. They didn't want to sit around and talk to the adults. They wanted to be out there playing with the kids.
Yes, that's my experience. That's my experience, too. And I have good news.
What's that?
I think I see our previous caller in the queue here, so let's check.
Very good.
Okay. Andrea, is that you on the air now?
Yeah, thanks for getting me back on.
Great.
So
what happened?
So do you remember where we were, or shall we just start afresh?
Well, I think what you were saying was that that I needed to look more at what was going on with me.
Yes. If my theory is accurate and the process that you're doing is an exact parallel to the process that he's doing, then seeing how that happens with you and what you need in order to turn that around, which in my opinion is not more punishment and criticism, if you can see that for yourself, if you can free yourself in that situation, then you really up your chances of being able to assist him, mentor him.
Gosh, I see what you're saying, because there's been a lot of a lot of conditioning.
And it's understandable, right? There's a tremendous amount of pressure to walk the conditioned path, especially with children. Tremendous pressure to get them to follow a conditioned orientation to life as quickly as possible. You know, he's only got one more year before he has reached the age of accountability or personal responsibility or whatever. So people get really anxious that he's not going to make it by the age of 7, and then he's probably going to be a little criminal.
Is this, like, based on psychology? Or?
For much of the world, age 7 is when a child is supposed to have completed that turning outward to make choices rather than turning inward.
Wow. Well, I certainly don't want him to be stuck in conditioning like I was in it for so many years.
Yeah. And so, you know, I hope just a couple of encouragements in a direction. I'm sure you talk with him.
Yeah.
And so encouragement number one is not to talk at him. And one of the things that adults often forget is that children take in an awful lot of information when we think they're not paying attention, and that mm-hmm. they're much more receptive to learning about us than being lectured about them.
I know, and that's why I was so upset that I couldn't be there for him, because I was thinking, oh, my God, what kind of messages is he getting from me?
Well, I wouldn't say that you need to be there for him in a particular situation. I mean, that's nice. But if we, at least I think this is true, it's not so much the big deal moments in life that impress us. It's the little day-to-day moments.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
And so if you begin to talk through with him what goes on with you about this particular way of being, you know, he doesn't have to know you're talking about him. You know,
uh-huh.
you can be talking about anybody. You can be talking about a situation where you get really upset
uh-huh.
and really don't know what to do about it, but what you look at is how you want to be as a person and the kinds of things that you do in order to be all right. Now, you have to be stealth and casual about this, right? Because, you know, they're intuitive little so-and-sos.
They sure
so
are.
He's going to know if you're sending him coded messages. And so it really is it's a whole orientation to life that adults can take with children that, to me anyway, is a whole lot more helpful than trying to convince them that we're some kind of perfected creatures who don't suffer and struggle from the same things that they're going through. If we're honest with them about what's going on with us, then they learn honest ways of being a human being from honest human beings. So
like if I feel like I can't be there for him, or, you know, I'm just really stuck in conditioning, could I just say that to him and say, you know, now I'm stuck in conditioning? And
yes, and you uh-huh. can talk through what's going on with you. I wouldn't say I can't be there for you, because if you're in a conversation with him, even if you're talking about what's going on with you, you actually are there for him. You see what I mean?
Oh, I do. I do. I see what you mean. Yeah.
Yeah. And so this is something that is, like, from today forward, for as long as he'll be in any kind of conversation with you. And I would suggest that if you take this direction, he might choose a lot more conversations with you than if you take the "let me tell you how you need to be" approached parenting.
Yeah.
So you look at what happens to you when you reach the point where you can't be the way you're supposed to be. And those are the kinds of conversations that you have with him.
Mm-hmm.
You could let him know that you're working on this project, and your project is this. And this is how it goes, and this is what you're struggling with, and you can ask him for advice. He's 6 years old. He has a lot of good ideas.
That's true. That's true. You're absolutely right about that. And he is a really sweet, very precious little boy.
Yeah. Okay. So,
all right. Thank
you
so much,
Sherry. You'll
let me know? I will. And you know what? A big thing I'm doing for myself?
What's that?
I'm going to the retreat in June.
Very good.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a great thing to do for the whole family.
Exactly. So I'm so looking forward to it.
Good, good. I'm glad.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay, thanks, Michael.
Take good care.
Thanks. Okay, you too.
Good night.
Bye.
Thanks for joining us, Andrea. You're listening to Open It with Sherry Huber. Sherry, we're going to hear from our sponsors, and then we'll be right back.
Right.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, this is Greta from Washington State.
Hi, Sherry. Hi, Michael. This is David calling from Hawaii.
This is Janet calling from New Hampshire. Hi, this is Catherine from St. Louis.
It's Rebecca from Austin, Texas.
Hi, Sherry. Hi, Michael. It's Anna here from Yorkshire in England.
It's Ramita calling from South Carolina.
Hi, Sherry. Hi, Michael. This is Todd calling from Canada.
2012 marks 10 years that Sherry and Michael have been doing Open Air. They have fielded thousands of your calls and archived hundreds of shows. In this year of deepening practice, we invite you to give a donation to support Open Air. Go to the Living Compassion website, click on the Donations tab, and make a donation of any size to the Zen Center, writing Open Air in the notes field. Step forward to be part of expanding the transformation. Lend your support today.
We're very lucky people.
We are very lucky people.
See you next week.
See you next week.
Good night.
Good night.
You are the light of the world. You are the light of the world. So shine.
This beautiful song by Trish Bruxford Colligan invites us to celebrate the unique light each of us brings to the world. Simply Celebrate wants to support you in living into that light, no matter where you are on the path, but especially when it's a little hard to see in the dark. With great gratitude to Sherry Huber and this amazing Sangha, Simply Celebrate uses the practice as a foundation for everything we do. We offer coaching, books, and self-mentoring programs to help you find more joy, color, spontaneity, and connection, moment to moment. Visit simplycelebrate.net and turn ordinary days into an extraordinary life.
This is Scott from Porch Dog Software. Today we're talking with Lanny, one of Porch Dog's favorite clients. Lanny, what do you think Open Air listeners might want to know about working with Porch Dog?
Well, Scott, I think they might want to know that you write all kinds of software for Macs and iPhones and iPads and for all types of companies, big ones and small ones like mine. And you do your work with a lot of enthusiasm.
Yeah. You know, one of the things we love about Open Air is the energy and enthusiasm in every show. We try and get lit up about everything we do here at Porch Dog Software, too.
Everything?
Yep. Especially the things we don't like.
Sweet.
Check us out at www.porchdogsoft.com. We look forward to hearing from you soon.
Welcome back to Open Air.
Sherry,
we have another call.
Have I mentioned lately how much I love that line, turning ordinary days into an extraordinary life?
Yes.
Isn't that a good, I mean, that just says it, doesn't it?
It is great.
Yeah. I mean, ordinary days, there's nothing more wonderful or precious than an ordinary day.
Yes.
They make up an extraordinary life.
Yes.
Brilliant.
Yeah. It is brilliant. It is brilliant. And I got it from you in our last email class with the imagery from
class
one. Yes. Brilliant.
Wow.
I listened to it on repeat at work, so I'm very familiar with it.
I love it. All right. Did you say we have another caller?
We do. Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Sherry and Michael, this is Susan, and I'm calling just to check in.
Well, good. I'm glad you are. What's going on?
I'm feeling, you know, pretty steady.
Steady?
Steady.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm feeling pretty steady, and actually just having you mention about that extraordinary life, you know, it's like, and the kind of your talk earlier just about being awake to the birds and the trees and nature and everything, and it's really interesting because I have been kind of struggling with this, you've got to get your life together.
Uh-huh.
As if my life is a wreck and a mess, you know? And it's just interesting when I really reflect on my life, I've had some extraordinary times, you know, just.
Yeah.
Being.
Just being.
Just being. And there have been some rather extraordinary bumps, you know, recently, which have been really painful. And yet, conditioning wants to define me by reminding me and stuck in that. Yeah, so I just was kind of thinking about, you know, how this theme that's been going on, I have to get my life together.
Yeah, which means you have to figure out
right
what to do and then how you're going to do that. And yeah?
Yeah.
And then
yeah.
And is there also an element of kind of get your life back to the way it was, or that sort of thing?
I would say, you know, to a certain extent, just because where my home was is just in a beautiful natural area. And I know there is definitely a sub-personality who is thinking that she can't live without it.
Uh-huh.
And because, I mean, I have found myself so drawn. I don't watch TV. And, like, when I go to the monastery, it's just wonderful.
Uh-huh.
And I love that.
Yeah.
And so I'm not sure how much of that critical factor is built into, like you say, wanting to get that life back.
Mm-hmm. Right. So knowing the elements, we could say the processes that you want to be there is not the same as needing the content to be the same, right?
So the content of, say, having a natural area, you mean?
Well, if what I want is to be in nature, and so I want trees and birds and, you know, that sort of thing. Then that's good to know, right? But it's not that it has to be, you know, on 320 acres in the foothills of the Sierra Nevadas, right? Because that's a little limited.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So
you say that it's a valid thing then, because I guess I'm really questioning so much going on. That it is an important aspect in my life.
Yes. However, it's not worth suffering over if you don't have it.
Uh-huh. Of just providing it at some point during my day or week or.
Yeah. Yeah. So, or you know that that's where you're headed. You know, that's so again, you can have an ambition for something. You can have your sights set on something or have an intention to, and that's the course that you're setting. That doesn't mean it's going to go any particular way, but you're making it clear that would be your preference.
Out there in the universe.
Exactly. Yeah, because you don't want to be so non-committal that life can't really tell where you want to live. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so all of those things can be the case, right? So you may not be able to live right now in your dream place, but that doesn't mean you don't know what that place would be like. So it's going to have have lots of trees and lots of animals and lots of that sort of thing. But to be open to the form that that takes, because very often life brings us things that are, in fact, better than what we would have wished for ourselves. Our vision might be somewhat limited. Life's vision is usually a lot larger. Right? So we don't want to get so specific that we're not open to possibilities that right now we can't see. And at the same time, if I'm not living in that kind of place, if that's not possible, then I think, as you were indicating, there's a lot of nature that belongs to everybody. So I can find places to be with trees and animals and blue skies and puffy clouds that I don't have to pay the taxes on.
I do have another question about something that happened at the monastery, too. I've had vertigo. Recently had a kind of a pretty surprising and sudden onslaught of it that lasted. I've been a fan of Louise Hay's books. And I'm up in it about.
What did Louise say?
She said scattered thinking. And I know, but it's something that I've been struggling with over the past few years or so. And these episodes come like a year, but this year it came three times.
It came what?
Three times.
Uh-huh.
So I just wondered what you might.
And have you had it checked out at all?
I did go to a ear, nose, and throat fellow, and he said it wasn't the one where the little crystals get floating, and it wasn't this disease that causes deafness, and it couldn't be corrected by this maneuver. But he suggested that I go through all this physical therapy to determine exactly where my balance system is off, and also have like a brain scan.
Uh-huh.
And I haven't really pursued any of that at all.
Uh huh.
So anyway, that.
And did you try the maneuver?
He actually could test to see if it if that's what was the cause of it. At least that's what he said.
Yeah, see, I don't trust anybody. You know, I mean, I hate to be like that, but I just don't. I would be, you know, with anything like that, I think we have the responsibility to become the world's foremost expert on the subject. Because you have to be the world's foremost expert on you, even if you can, pursue other people who have ideas, you know, ultimately you're the one who's responsible for taking care of you. So that would be my first encouragement. And then the second, I'm kind of a fan of Louise Hay, too. So, you know,
you're a fan of what?
A fan of Louise Hay.
Oh, uh-huh.
Yeah. And so it sounded like that kind of resonated for you.
Yeah.
Yeah?
Well, the voices. Oh, my God.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, the spirit of inquiry that we talk about all the time, you know, to just be with. If I say watch, it sounds much more, I don't know what the word is, but you're just noticing. You're aware of everything. All the clues, you know, you're just a Sherlock Holmes for this vertigo. You know, what's going on? On every level, body, mind, emotions. You know, what time of any, you know, just everything that you can notice to see if you can get a sense of what is the system responding to. And I'm convinced that there's nothing we can't know about anything with that approach.
Investigator and pay such close attention.
Yes. Yeah. To just be really interested in it, fascinated by it, not obsessive.
Yeah.
You know, just really interested in it. See what it tells you.
Right.
Not what the voices tell you. We know what they'll tell you.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. That.
Okay?
All right. Okay.
All right.
Oh, thank you, Sherry.
Let's stay in touch.
All right.
Okay. Good night.
Good night, Susan. Thank you for joining us. Sherry, we have about 4 minutes until the hour. Would you like to?
What do you think? Shall we try it?
Let's try it. Okay, next caller. You are now live on the air. Would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, Sherry and Michael. It's Debbie.
Well, hello.
Hi.
How are you?
Good. What's going on?
I love that I got on with 4 minutes left. Well, I called in before.
Uh-huh, I remember.
And shared that I was on a new life trajectory that I never thought I always knew would never have gone on that trajectory.
Uh-huh.
And it's gone remarkably smoothly and brought the results I wanted for the moment.
Good,
but it's
love
just
that.
Day by day thing. So it's been lovely. And I've been watching, I've been wondering if my particular, the conditioning that I'm most familiar with and which tortures me perhaps most is hurry up. You could be or should be doing something else. And it's almost like water I breathe in that I turn my attention away from. I wondered to myself whether now that things are moving in a direction I've wanted for many, many years, whether those voices would subside, whether the voices came out of an existential need or something. Not that the voices were ever helpful towards that end at all, quite the opposite.
Right.
But just that the very nature of those voices. And of course, what I found is that when my attention is not well directed, and a lot of the time it really is, I'm very lucky that way. But it happened today, and it happened over the weekend with a force I'm not even used to, and I'm used to that. Where enormous frustration for time wasted, hurry up, I should be doing something else, even with the situation being what it is.
Uh-huh.
So I guess this is my experience, and I'm wondering what your experience around whether conditioning ever comes, the nature of the voices, reflects on a situation in life. Not that those voices are helpful. They're never helpful. But.
Yeah. So two things about it. One, urgency is the primary tool of karmic conditioning self-hatred. That's just how it messes people up most often and most effectively. So get really busy, get really urgent, anxious, worried, and that person will make really bad decisions.
Mm.
And my experience of the voices is that they are there for their own purpose. And it has nothing. It has everything to do with process and nothing to do with content. So, as you've probably noticed, they're specialists in flipping from one side of a duality to the other. So, there's an opportunity for me to do something I should do it. Say, okay, I'm going to do it. Oh, what are you thinking of? You shouldn't eat that. You'll hate it. It'll be awful. You'd be so sorry. That kind of thing. You know, I should go to that party, get talked into that, and then I'm at that party and saying, oh, you should have gone to that other thing that would have been much more fun than this is. So they're just constantly using whatever life circumstances are there to provide maximum suffering.
It's like when they're in full force,
uh-huh.
I cannot slow inside. I can't slow down to even organize myself towards whatever task there is. I mean, it's like it feels so fast inside.
Yeah.
And noisy.
Yeah.
So noisy.
Frenetic.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And so do you ever do things like exercise
all day every day.
Put on music
so
and jump around or that sort of thing?
Yes. All the time.
And it's beyond that.
Oh, well, I love that.
But I mean the energy is not dissipated through that kind of physical activity.
Oh, it helps a ton.
Right.
That physical activity helps a ton.
Right, but it can't. It doesn't dissipate it.
A lot of times it does.
Uh huh.
A lot of times it does, but it's got huge momentum. Sometimes it's got huge momentum, and it can even go through that.
Okay, then here's the other one. If you want to do something that is beyond challenging, okay? So the next time it happens, just lie down on the floor.
Right.
Yeah, and all of your attention is on that energy, that hysterical, is that too strong a word? Hysterical energy rocketing around inside your body. And you're not turning your attention away from it at all. You're trying to keep your attention completely focused on it.
I love that.
Okay, you'll let me know what happens.
Well, I just know it's the hardest thing in the world to actually lie there, and then it's great. I do it.
Oh.
It's the hardest thing. It's like wild horses, and I have to pull them in.
That's right.
I do this, it's amazing because the difference in the speed of my mind shifts.
Yes.
But I, of course, remembering, and that's exactly what I'll do.
Good. Yeah. It takes tremendous discipline because everything in conditioned reality is set up to avoid that experience. Never do people get encouraged to go into it.
No, it's like the last thing in the world that I would want to do.
That's it.
Last thing.
That's it. But you're a scientist, so you're going to find
out.
Yeah. Very good.
I will definitely do that.
All right.
I'm really looking forward to seeing you and everybody at the monastery in June
for the
What You Practice retreat. So, and thank you for taking my call.
Well, you are so welcome. Talk to you soon.
Okay.
All right.
Take care. Good night, Michael.
Good night.
Thank you,
good night.
Night.
Thanks for joining us, Debbie. You've been listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. We are lucky people, Sherry.
We are. There's so much exciting stuff that we can explore and experiment with.
That's great.
Thanks, Michael.
Thank you, Sherry.
Good night.
Good night.